From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, two guests, Richard Sauter, Bill Hamilton, Underground Bases and Tunnels. Something strange is going on in this country. We'll try to find out. Japan's Mazda Motor Corporation will begin leasing a dual-fuel car that can run on both hydrogen and gasoline in the auto industry's latest effort to reduce oil consumption in vehicles. Most major automakers are developing zero-emission hydrogen-powered fuel cell cars as a potential alternative to today's conventional gasoline and diesel engine cars, but they believe they are decades away from mass production due to the high development costs and lack of infrastructure. Mazda says, though, its RX-8 Hydrogen RE, that's what it's called, based on its popular RX-8 sports car, gets around these problems by running on gasoline in the absence of a hydrogen filling station and using existing engine parts and production facilities to lower costs. The car is powered by Mazda's rotary engine and can switch between hydrogen and gasoline fuel with a flick of a switch. It can cruise for a maximum 62 miles on hydrogen, 341 miles on gasoline, but it's a darn good start. States will no longer have to add corn-based ethanol or MTBE to gasoline to fight pollution, a requirement that costs as much as 8 cents a gallon under rules announced by the Environmental Protection Agency. They eliminate a mandate from the 1990 Clean Air Act that gasoline used in metropolitan areas with the worst smog contain 2% oxygen by weight. The law did not say which oxygen must be used, but most refiners use either ethanol or MTBE. California, New York, Connecticut unsuccessfully had asked the EPA for a waiver of the requirement because the states had banned MTBE after finding out that it polluted the groundwater. The states were forced to use ethanol, which they contend worsen pollution problems. Now, the EPA has now said, though, that they're throwing out all those rules. A chastised Homeland Security Director, Michael Chertoff, sparred with senators of both parties on Wednesday as he acknowledged many lapses in his agency's response to Hurricane Katrina. Chertoff told the Senate Committee on Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs that he would do things differently if he had the chance, and he said one thing he would not do is give overall responsibility for the relief effort to Michael Brown, who was then the director of FEMA at the time. Brown resigned under pressure shortly after the August 29th storm devastated New Orleans and much of the Gulf Coast. He has accused Chertoff and White House officials of ignoring his warnings on the day of the storm. Vice President Dick Cheney has accepted now full blame for shooting a fellow hunter and defended his decision to not publicly disclose the accident until the following day. He said he called it one of the worst days of his life. This is a quote. "I'm the guy who pulled the trigger that fired the round that hit Harry." Cheney told Fox News this in his first public comments since the shooting occurred Saturday in South Texas. Cheney described seeing the 78-year-old Harry Withington fall to the ground after he pulled the trigger while aiming at quail. As we reported several days ago, a company owned by the government of Dubai in the United Arab Emirates is poised now to take over 6 U.S. ports, a development that now has local and federal officials outraged. A merger deal approved by the federal government has the company currently running the ports, the London-based Peninsular and Oriental Steam Navigation Company, getting acquired by the company in Dubai, the United Arab Emirates, which has known ties to terrorists and hijackers, raising concern about the security issues at these ports. Now, these are the ports that are involved in this deal. Incredible. New York, Baltimore, New Jersey, New Orleans, Miami, and Philadelphia. A Republican minority leader of the New York City Council, James Odo, told the New York Sun, on the face of this, "This looks like expletive insanity to me," and it is. ABC News has obtained 12 hours of tape recordings of Saddam Hussein meeting with top aides during the 1990s, tapes apparently recorded in Baghdad's version of the Oval Office. ABC News obtained these tapes from Bill Tierney, a former member of United Nations inspection team who translated them for the FBI. Tierney said the government is wrong to keep these tapes and other secrets from the public. In a moment, Bill Tierney on Coast to Coast AM. Bill Tierney entered the Army in 1983. He trained in Arabic language and Iraqi dialect and interrogation and became a warrant officer in 1990. Bill participated in the Gulf War as a liaison officer to Saudis, Kuwaitis, and Egyptians and served as an interrogator during the ground offensive phase. As I also mentioned, a former member of United Nations inspection team who translated these tapes for the FBI, Bill Tierney, our guest this hour on Coast to Coast. Bill, welcome back. It's been way too long.
How are you, George? You still have that little promo. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
You keep track of all the papers on your desk.
Absolutely.
I'm very impressed.
Absolutely. Hey, I got to tell you, first of all, how did these tapes come into your...
I'm so glad you started off with that question because over here on the East Coast, Nightline has already run. I guess it hasn't run, on the West Coast yet. Is that correct?
It is probably correct.
Yeah, because it's on at 11:30. So ABC News was the first to respond to a press release that John Loftus, in charge of the Intelligence Summit, put out stating we were going to give this presentation. Okay, early bird gets the word. No
right.
Problem. We're gonna trust these guys. I've seen two stories, one on World News Tonight and now the Nightline. The World News Tonight story gets a B+, a good B+. The Nightline story gets a generous D.
Really?
Yes.
Why?
Well, first off, there is a personal issue here. They insinuate on two occasions that I'm revealing classified information. But because your listeners are smart enough to listen to radio, where you get the real deal, I'm going to tell you what happened.
All right, good. Because this is, as you know, Bill, a major story. It's going around the world now.
Oh, yeah.
And we want to keep you this entire hour. There's lots to talk with you about. Go ahead.
Sure, go ahead. All right. So I am a former military officer, warrant officer, interrogator, Arabic speaker. I now translate freelance, and I was contacted at the end of August 2005 to translate or actually transcribe tapes, put it into Arabic, and then translate that into English.
All right.
My first response was when I was told that this was coming from the National Virtual Translation Center, I said, well, sorry, I can't do it. Because, like quite a number of people my age, 40s, 26 years ago, I smoked more than 15 marijuana cigarettes.
Uh-huh.
Back in the 70s, when I was young and stupid, I was, in fact, young and stupid. And the FBI has a requirement, if at any time in your life you've smoked more than 15, then sorry. So I didn't want it to go, I didn't want to waste any time.
I
just said, sorry, can't do it. They came back to me and said, that's not an issue. These are unclassified. Okay, well then, go ahead and send them to me. I'll take a look. So they did. I thought, coming from the FBI, because the FBI actually runs this virtual translation center, that, and then I listened and I sort of took a little clip. I thought it was something to do with the Saddam's trial. When I kept listening, no, these were meetings. And my first suspicion was that these were plants to make it look like he never had any weapons, because I just seen things that the
right.
Iraqis have
okay.
done. So I'm very suspicious, being a former inspector, extremely suspicious.
Okay.
Then I went through the whole thing, and at one point, in the first one that I did, they're talking about books printed after the first Gulf War. And after discussion, Saddam says, when we do a book, it's going to be entitled The Solution. because everyone's talking about the Gulf War or the mother of all battles being over. It's not over. It's ongoing. We're still in it right now, and that sort of grabbed my attention, because if this was a plant, he wouldn't be saying something like that.
You're right. You're right.
All right, so I finished that one. Started the next one. The next one is a series of briefings from early 1992, where one briefer after the other is talking about rebuilding their weapons of mass destruction program. And it's much more detailed than what you heard on World News Tonight.
Are you convinced at this point, Bill, based on what you have heard, that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction sometime before we decided to go in?
Oh, yes. Okay. Yes, definitely. Definitely. Not only that, but the man was at war with us. He was at war during the 90s. He simply didn't do it the way we're used to. I mean, he tried that in the first Gulf War. You go to conventional against the United States, and, you know, you're going to get shellacked.
Do these tapes vindicate George W. Bush?
Yes, they do.
Okay.
They most certainly do, regardless of a comment by Brian Ross at the end of the Nightline report. It was sort of ridiculous that he would even try and weasel that in, because there is one segment they go into in detail, and I'd like you and your listeners to have a much fuller picture of that. We can come back to that, but I want to make something real clear. I was very careful in everything I did. I did the job. I sent them in. I went on to another job. I've got translations. I normally do translations from English into Arabic. Transcriptions are better left to a native speaker. So I'm going about my business in November, and I hear National Security Advisor Stephen Hadley make a public announcement that the United States government was all wrong on the weapons of mass destruction. Now, this was 5-6 weeks after I had sent this in. I'm going, wait a minute. What is going on here?
Yeah.
So what I did is I decided that I wanted to make... See, I worked in the intelligence community. I know how it can get. So I made the decision to ensure that the client, and that is the entire U.S. government, to include the senior levels at the policy area, knew of this product that they had paid for. They paid for me to do it, so I wanted to make sure that they knew about it. So I contacted John Loftus, who I met last year through the Intelligence Summit.
And we know John. He's been on the show before.
Oh, okay. He put me in touch with someone at the Secretary of Defense's office. I wrote up a two-pager, bullet points. Here's the names of the tapes. This is where you can find them. Everything they needed to verify everything I was saying. 2 weeks passed, nothing. More time, no response. Not good, bad, nothing. Not like, oh, thank you very much, we'll take it from here. Zip.
Bill, why didn't anybody rush these tapes to the White House and say,
well, I'm going to get to that.
Okay.
That's an excellent question. I'm going to get to that, because there are heroes in this story. There are heroes. So now I'm thinking, here I am. I'm sitting on this. The government, now, and then during this time frame also, in December, the president also made a public announcement. Yes, the United States government was wrong on weapons of mass destruction. Oh, wait a minute. It still hasn't. I can't take as a possibility that if they were briefed on these, they would have said this. All right. That I took, I made that assumption. I believe it's a safe assumption. So that leaves two possibilities. Either through incompetence,
which is possible,
or intent,
which is possible.
This information did not reach those it should have. So I went on my way to make that happen. When there was no response, talked to John, said, look, this has got to get out. I mean, we have people dying in Iraq right now, and the question of whether it was right or wrong, is based on information like this.
And
this
it's tearing the country apart, and here you are knowing this.
Right.
And you're also knowing that nobody's talking about
Right. You got it. So I talked to John, said, look, we need to make this public. And we discussed the best way to do it. I opted for making a very detailed, broad, thorough presentation at the Intelligence Summit. And John, just to make sure everyone knew what was going to happen, he posted it to his website for intelligencesummit.org. He also put out a press release. Now, two things happened. The House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, Representative Hoekstra, it reached him. He sent down his most senior, most high-speed staffer. He jumped on a plane, came to where I was at, sat down with me. I gave him both the entire copy of everything I had and some key excerpts just to make it easy to verify. Because as far as they're concerned, this is some schmuck in the hinterlands saying Saddam's talking on these tapes, you know?
And Bill,
they have it checked out.
And this is a smoking gun.
Oh, boy, if any of your listeners are in anywhere near the Washington area, come to Arlington on Saturday, and you are going to have your socks blown.
Well, we have many that listen on WMAL up there in Washington,
okay,
D.C.
Okay, now let me finish the narrative here, because it's important coming up to how ABC handled this story. Okay, so they brought it up. They sent it to people who could check this out. They all came back. Yes, it's Saddam. Yes, he's talking about these things. I gave them the entire chain of custody on exactly how it happened. They went, verified it, and so I was good. I'm clear. And so we kept, preparing. I've been trying to do some work. I've taken time off from work. I'm like behind here.
All right. Now, how did they? How did you get the
ABC got in touch with me, and they came down, had a long talk, and we did the interview on Monday, and they,
right.
You know, you slice and dice, and they put their story together. And this bit about, you know, I stated that the U.S. government the government is wrong to keep these secret from the public. Well, I'd never said that.
You didn't say that.
I never said that, and that's a serious issue here. I am not revealing classified information. Now, somebody in the government slapped an unclassified on this, and if the government wanted to reclassify, which is they do, they could have done that.
Sure, and then you couldn't have released.
And them. I made that super clear. I put it into the interview. But, you know, it was about 15 minutes interview, and it came down to about, you know, 10 seconds. That's standard. So there's that. Now that I've got it on your, you know, this is all going to be transcribed, because I don't have to answer for anything of what I've done. I want to know who was responsible for making sure senior people knew about this and blew it. They're the ones who have to answer for it.
Well, absolutely. That's the story. Because this should have been released as soon as you turned it in. And as soon as you started telling people, hey, you're not going to believe this, but this is what's on here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is absolutely stunning. This is like the Watergate tapes almost, all over again.
Well, I only had one CD full. I have to check it, but I think there was 8 or 9 tapes of meetings, roughly. Some were an hour and a half, some were an hour, some were a little bit shorter. Having worked Iraq, I mean, I started working on Iraq from 1985. I was stationed at Central Command in 1995, and for the next 5 years, every day, I walked into work and I read hundreds of documents, hundreds of reports on Iraq. You know, it was just pouring out of my ears. I feel absolutely certain that somewhere in Saddam's hierarchy in his little presidential office, there was some little guy whose job was to record all his meetings and then keep a very detailed library. So if Saddam wanted to know what was said 3 months ago, he calls Ahmed, and Ahmed goes running off and comes back to him.
Hey, Bill, we're going to take this quick break, but we'll be right back with you. Then I want to find out if you think these apparent weapons of mass destruction that Saddam was talking about were shipped to Syria, And also, I want you to verify whether Saddam talked about terrorism and said that he notified the United States that terrorism was coming. We'll talk about that in a moment, too. Our guest tonight, Bill Tierney. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. Well, tomorrow in Canada, you've got that opportunity to watch the Predictions television show, either on satellite or on cable. Those of you who may have missed it entirely, both in the United States and in portions of Canada, you can go to www.predictions.tv. Simple enough. You can view it right off your computer screen that way, or you can order a DVD if you prefer. The Predictions.tv show only has about a few weeks to run in Canada, so take advantage of it. Then again, if you just want to view it, you can go to the Predictions.tv website, or you can get it now right off that website on DVD. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Bill Tierney is our guest. Bill, question here, and it could be one of irony. Do you think the president, when he made his case for going into Iraq, and he said there were weapons of mass destruction,
right,
might that have been based on some of the information that is on these tapes with Saddam talking? Or did he luck into this, and did he really just make it all up? And now we might have real proof to help him out. What do you think?
No, we had the actually from the tapes. There's already something on here. I'm going to tease it. There's something on here that I'm not going to tell you about. That I'm going to wait.
Why?
Saturday.
Why? Okay.
All right. I'm going to talk about a lot. I'm going to get on this, especially what was on ABC News. But no, he went on the assessments that we had. The assessments. Let's look at it this way. When I was an UNSCOM inspector, the Iraqis had to account for instance, growth medium to produce biological weapons. And if they say, well, yeah, we had some in a truck, but the truck had a flat as it was going over a bridge and it went over the side and the whole thing smashed and we lost 20 tons.
Yeah.
Well, those things do happen. However, we caught them in so many lies, you just couldn't believe them on anything. So because of that, because of their duplicity, it's hard to tell if they had X amount of anthrax or not. So because maybe they did actually lose it, maybe they were experimenting and they had to throw some things out. There's valid reasons. So you could be off on, say, a quantity of something because you're making an assessment on partial information where you don't have full access. I really want to make, when I talk about this, I want to stress something as much as I can to your audience. There's a massive difference between legal proof and an intelligence assessment.
Yes.
Legal proof is talking about indicators of a past act. At an intelligence assessment, they're talking about a future action. Put yourself in a
shoes. Well, like we're doing with Iran right now.
Well, exactly. I always try to explain it. You're a German officer in France in the spring of 1944. Your boss wants to know where the Allies are going to land. Now, would you say, well, sir, when I actually have proof of them landing, I'll get back to you.
Yeah, they don't.
It doesn't work that way.
And they don't want to know that.
Right, they don't want to know that. And so it's very convenient for certain parties to blur that when it serves their purpose. All right, I just want to make that clear. So, yes, some of the peripheral details could have been wrong, but the major question was Iraq complying with the UN resolutions? No, absolutely not. In fact, what comes out of this is that Saddam was still at war with us. This business about some people in New York writing up a piece of paper, from his point of view, from listening to him in his meetings, He's like, hey, what? Who cares what they think? It's what I can get away with. That's all that matters.
Does he talk at all, Bill, about shipping the stuff off to Syria?
No, because this was, one of these is from post-2000, One of the meetings occurred after 2000 because internal in the meeting, one of the briefers talks about something that happened in the year 2000. The rest are from either 1992 or mid-90s. So there wasn't a need, you know, there was no...
Okay, now see, all right, now here's a question, because it's been well known that he possibly had chemicals or biologicals and then destroyed them after the first Gulf War. What we really never then were able to prove was whether he kicked that and jump-started that again. So my question is based on these tapes, do you have any idea of whether maybe we're just talking about an older situation as opposed to him starting a new program?
No.
We do not know that.
No, wait, what do you...
Well, my question is the tapes really don't tell us that he had an ongoing weapons of mass destruction program, do they?
They most certainly do.
You think so? Okay.
Oh, yeah. I'm pulling through one here. Now, I was ready to get into...
All right, so it's not like he got rid of it in the 90s and then stopped. You're saying that this continued.
Okay, here's somebody giving him... Said I'm a brief. Sir, the groups of missiles whose equipment was destroyed, the warheads were removed on cattle trucks that were at the military industrial facility, and the national communications unintelligible. Also, we would like to restart our activity in reforming some of the material that was destroyed, such as the advanced technology equipment. We also removed our active warhead groups from Asad Babel. Asad Babel means Lion of Babylon. Now, I have friends that were involved with the UNSCOM inspections who tracked some of these things. Like, they were specialists in missiles or specialists in chem, and I sent this to them, and they went over this with a fine-tooth comb. What I just read you, we also removed our active warhead groups from Asad Babel. Asad Babel was the name of a modified tank. But so there was like an immediate thing, okay, well, they're just talking about tanks. But when I came back to it, it didn't make sense because there's a certain term you use for tank ammunition. They're not using that here. They're using a warhead that you have on the tip of a missile. And it's a active warhead group. That's the only place in all of the meetings that I listen to where they use that term. What this means is that there's a whole lot of stuff out there we don't know yet.
And I guess also, if we put this in perspective of what the pilot and the officer Georges Sada has said now in his book,
right,
that he knows pilots who flew this material and these chemicals and biologicals into Syria.
Right.
Couple this with these tapes that you have interpreted and translated. It's a major story, which gets us back to the beginning. Why this thing has been so buried, I don't understand why the president hasn't pulled out this report right now and said, see, I told you so. What's holding him back?
Well, he might want to verify it. Now, I am a non-native speaker. I have a lot of experience in Iraq, both in the during the inspections, and I just did 8 months doing counter-infiltration, which is a whole nother show. Spies and infiltrators in the hundreds. Anyway, but at the same time, not only a native Iraqi speaker, but somebody who knows Ba'ath Party jargon, for instance. Actually, George Sada would be a perfect person to listen to these things. He was in meetings like this.
Yes.
He would be able to nail it. But you talked about, is there show proof of there being rebuilding? Okay. Same meeting, different briefer. And Saddam says, Allah grant you. Okay, Hussein, inform us on Musanna. Now, Musanna is the name, what we understood as a facility in the desert west, I mean, just out by itself. And that's where they made their chemical weapons. So, and it was destroyed because we knew about it before the war. So we came and bombed it, you know, pretty well during the first Gulf War. Now, this is happening in early 1992.
Right.
So he asked for a briefing. What's the status on Musanna? The answer is, yes, sir. A moment, sir. Coughs. Sir, within the establishment, the enemy, of course, can distinguish one facility from another. The enemy attacked in a forceful manner. The establishment is made up of many facilities. The main facility is large and is distinguished from other establishments by its geographic expansion. The other sites, we have four toxic sites. One of the sites is within other facilities. It is very specialized for filling and other things. There are other new facilities, the indistinct, from the year 87. The strange thing about Mithunna is that the bombardment focused on the workshop even more than the main building at Mithunna and the scientific library with the indistinct. I didn't note the remainder of the establishments since their headquarters are better informed. Sir, the establishment, as a group of cadre, with the situation by the commission incapacitating the activities in the establishment from the viewpoint of inspections and photography, etc., your guidance to Colonel Luckdom, the deputy, and the brigadier general. How is the technical side? Mithunna establishment is still the cadre surveyed for a building project in Beji and in Kaka. That is a location in Iraq. With that, there were contributions on how to wrestle with the commission with a number of buildings with chloride. Little by little, we are presenting Dubachin, that's a word I didn't understand, in the building campaign. Right now, we have a very large building campaign in a number of main sites, three support sites and the main location, indistinct. With a building campaign, despite the annoyance presented by the inspection teams. We will, in Fahak, I'm not sure what that means, as the military industrial organization, in the sweet challenge, as we call it at Mithunna, that the other establishments rebuild and produce. We will rebuild ourselves and with others in anything that serves industry, medicine, and mobiles. I don't know what he means by mobile.
The mobiles could be those portable missiles.
It could be the mobile labs, but
right.
Let's just keep to what it says. This is our behavior at the present time. There remains another conflict. How to save the materials from their hands? We have a plan with Deputy Luckdom, directed with your guidance, I mean. Allah willing, sir, Mithunna will remain like the decade, and I'm not sure why.
These are people talking to Saddam, right?
This is a briefing from Saddam. Now, Saddam says, now I have to gain the, see, if you come to the intelligence summit, you'll be able to hear the tone of voice, which is extremely important. But
sure.
Saddam's saying, don't be too riled. You know, there's a word here. I tried looking it up. I couldn't find it. But it's basically saying, don't get too bent out of shape with this stuff. This material can be used for security purposes, but they can confirm that it's used for civilian purposes. Not after confirming that I don't have any intention of producing in this area. And they don't have any right to, it must go to fertilizer regarding the materials that are, they can be for civilian or military purposes before the final production.
So he's trying to hedge his bets a little bit.
There was always a massive problem, with the inspection process when you have precursor chemicals for chemical weapons. Before you mix them together, they're just chemicals.
No.
Anybody can, you know, people need chemicals for all sorts of reasons.
One of the major stories that ABC News mentioned tonight was that they were saying Saddam predicted terrorist attacks on the United States and that he warned us that something would happen. Is that true?
I heard that. They didn't run any of this by me. They got my side. You know, they did their little interview, but I heard it tonight. Now, I want to be super careful with everything I say. So I haven't had a chance since listening to it to go back to the tape because some of these things, they could be right, all right? So I just want to, you know, be careful here. However, I have in front of me the transcript so that you'll hear what happened before and what happened after. And I have a different take. Are we ready for a break, or do you want to jump in?
No, because we're going to just go straight through, and then we're done.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay, here's the general context is Tariq Aziz is talking about his dealings with UNSCOM, and the idea was to eliminate all the reservations, all the challenges, in order to close the files, was the term that was used. Close the chemical file, close the missile file, mm-hmm. close the bio file. So Tariq Aziz, and he is one bombastic person, believe me. He said, I said, the Brazilians, we don't have anything to do with them. Egypt, I told them, Egypt, someone interrupts them. And then this was also the case. I answered them and said this subject and repeated it many times. The purchases of chemicals in 88 and 89 and 90 are a remaining point also to be solved. I mean, there isn't anything remaining in missiles and chemicals, anything critical. That means anything that UNSCOM can point out. This is in
the violation.
Well, this is in Tariq Aziz's assessment of how they're dealing with UNSCOM to close this thing down. Now, and then he says, the problem is biological. Biological, in my estimation, I don't want to get into any explanations, but in my estimation, we have a solution. Huh? What? We can do it. Huh? Yes, we can do it. We can find a solution. But on this subject, the Russians and Brazilians must cooperate with us. I asked General Ammer and Riyadh that they get involved with unintelligible because the tangible thing is that the working gap, the factories that are, then Sadat asked, there must be doubts about them under the Kasserat. You have to get a native speaker to figure that one out.
All right, and I've got 2 minutes to go, Bill.
Okay, let me hone in on it then. Okay. Let me get to my page here. All right, Tariq Aziz says,
and there could be.
This talk that Iraq produces or uses terrorism, this is an empty allegation. Somebody could say any country could. Then Saddam says, terrorism is coming. With the Americans 2 years ago, not a long while ago, with the British, I believe, there was a campaign, unintelligible, and that's where I have to check whether ABC got it right. It was one of them, that in the future there would be terrorism with weapons of mass destruction. What is it that we consider this technique and use people involved with smuggling? Yeah, there were stories of smuggling. Then someone chimes in, but sir, germ warfare, Saddam states. Before Little in 89, they said in the future they would see a nuclear explosion in, for example, Washington, or germ, or chemical. Tariq Aziz states, sir, germ, biological. We can arrange a house. We can arrange a truck with, Saddam says, this is coming. This story is coming, but not from Iraq. Tariq Aziz, sir, they can't do it. Saddam Hussein, it is coming from others. Then Tariq Aziz states, now this is mine.
Maybe he said that because he knew the tape was running.
Well.
You know?
No, I'm going to get back to this. Biological, this is simple to arrange.
Okay, and we've got 10 seconds to go, Bill. Sorry, I've got to get, got to get you back on.
Either he knows about somebody else or he's going to use proxies. It's much more likely that he's going to use proxies.
And that changes the complexity of that whole statement then.
Completely. And it makes more sense because what in fact did Iraq do? They use proxies.
We got to get you back on after Saturday. Sounds like you've got something else you're going to talk about.
Well, there's more to come.
All right. Thanks, Bill. It's Bill Turney. He was a former member of the United Nations inspection team, and he did his translating of these tapes. And why these tapes haven't been spread all over the place is beyond me. Strange story. I'll be back in a moment with two guests, Dr. Richard Sauter and Bill Hamilton, as we talk about underground bases and tunnels right here on Coast to Coast AM.